Welcome back, Take Two to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Tuesday, April 5th, 2022.
Is the Joby season here?
The season is over. The buzzer has been retired for the offseason. And welcome back. This is our 2022 season wrap-up show. And there's, you know, only one thing we should got to talk about here. Noises.
Yeah.
Is this a church podcast?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what that always sounded like. Not exactly the thing that gets you, like, you know, it's not exactly Thunderstruck or Inner Sandman. It doesn't exactly get
a little better. Yes, Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Congratulations to the Kansas Jayhawks. They are our national champions. And as a result, what we want to do on this show here is take a look back at what happened in the national semifinals and the championship, go over a few other things. But first of all, I guess I should introduce everyone who's here, though. I'm Chad Sherwood. To my sides, David Griggs and John Tytel. Directly below me, Mike Cha. His sides, John Salica and Joby Fortson. And let's go ahead and pull up for the last time.
I just see Chad.
What is it?
I just see you on the screen.
Well, I don't really care, Griggs. Can
right.
I?
Well, now I see the bracket.
Okay. Now we should be seeing the brackets. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend with the championship game and the semifinals before that. And let's start with the two semifinals in the order they were played. Beginning with the Kansas Villanova game. Joby, let me start with you here. This game was the only one of the three games this weekend that was really just a complete snoozer.
Well, at one point, you thought it might not be when Villanova cut it to six halfway through the second half. You go, well, maybe that could be. But like you see often when one team runs out like Kansas did against Villanova, the result factor when the team behind crawls back sometimes in the championship game being a very distinct different story. But sometimes that team just has given it all they can to get back in the game and then they've run out of gas, especially a Villanova team that was down to five, six at best healthy players. They just, they were outclassed. Give Kansas credit. I mean, oh my gosh, nailing three after three after three to start the game. And then the tremendous defense they actually did forcing Villanova out, was very impressed with that, with the defense for the Jayhawks throughout the tournament. And Villanova, the shots weren't hitting, but a lot of that has to do with the Jayhawks, to their credit. The better team won. Sometimes that actually happens in that case.
Yeah, Tytel, this Villanova team just was not the same team without Justin Moore, I thought also.
You're correct. I mean, I don't know that he would have swung a loss to a victory, but we might have, but we'll never know. Villanova did Villanova things. They made their threes. They made their free throws. Unfortunately, they couldn't turn the ball over too much on defense. Kansas only had seven turnovers. They couldn't stop McCormack, 25 points, 10 of 12 from the field, just a force of nature underneath. I don't know that a lot of people say that guards are how you win tournament games. Size does matter at some point, and Kansas had the size and they used it.
Size does matter. Yeah, you're just a walking, that's what she said.
I'd say Tytel would be in agreement. Size mattered on all three games.
Let's try to bring this back in here a little bit. After that game, though, Mike, let me start with you here. The Duke-North Carolina game, for the first time ever in the NCAA tournament, it happened.
Oh.
And it was a great game and the end of Coach K's career.
Indeed it was. I mean, you, and especially in the second half, you could just feel the intensity from both sides. It was like, wow. You know, Duke was up, I think, 4 or 5 points early in the second half, and then North Carolina won on an 11-0 run, and I think after that it kind of, you know, the momentum swung in their favor. But you, like I said, you can just feel the intensity, the high intensity, especially down the stretch.
Yes, Stalika, I want to bring you in on this as well. I mean, this was the game that I guess ESPN has wanted for all these years. They finally got it, right?
Well, it's a game that ESPN finally wanted, but at the same token, TBS was the one that was actually carrying the game this year. Now, granted, there's always the possibility that K may come back, although I think his career is going to be done no matter how much Duke fans are probably going to be dreading the offseason.
I don't know how much they're dreading the offseason. This may be one of the top teams of the nation going in next season, next year. But Tytel, Coach K, his career, I believe, is done now. And even though it would end on a Carolina loss.
Yeah, I also thought Tom Brady's career was done. So what do I know? But yes, I mean, no, I think he's done. He's old. He's got rings. He's got money. He has nothing left to prove, although neither does Tom Brady. His team played great. They led by 7 early in the second half. They never had a deficit of more than 6, and they hung with Carolina punch for punch the whole way through. They couldn't make their threes, 5 of 22. So I think that they'll regret that a little. I mean, they'll regret that a lot, but it happens. Sometimes your whole team has an off night, and that's how you lose tournament games.
Yeah, and Griggs, unfortunately, I've got to show something here. For years now, we've been touting our rivalry checker. And yeah. There it is, Duke, North Carolina, 8 miles apart. They have been in the NCAA tournament now. It's official.
Yeah, it really was something to see. I kind of didn't want to see it happen just because, like, I always wanted to be able to say that it had never happened, and now that it has. But we've seen very intense rivals play in the NCAA tournament before, but it is a little bit rare because, again, the way the bracketing format works, in order for that to happen, it would have to happen very deep in the tournament. But we've seen Louisville and Kentucky in the Final Four. It wasn't quite the Final Four, and it's not a regular rivalry, but there was a lot of anticipation for the year Wichita State and Kansas finally played, a game that Wichita won.
Could you say Villanova-Georgetown? Come on.
Yeah, Villanova-Georgetown. I mean, we've seen it happen. That was also deep in the tournament.
That was a championship game. Yeah.
Yeah. But this one, it doesn't – not every tournament game is intense, but this was intense – it had another layer of intensity because not only was it a Final Four game, it was a Final Four game between intense rivals, bitter rivals that were very familiar with each other, and it just felt a little bit different. When Louisville and Kentucky played it the first time, at least in the Final Four, it was intense, but it was not down to the wire like this was. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like this ever. I'm trying to think, like, when did we see a Final Four game that was anything like that between two bitter, evenly matched rivals? That
there's one that does that jump one. Out. There is one that jumps out.
Go ahead. I might be.
And that's Duke Maryland.
You're right. Yeah,
Duke Maryland was a great Final Four game with Maryland coming out on top, and they were. I mean, we're talking. I mean, College Park, win or lose, would burn after those two games. So it was it was definitely reciprocated because I think it was the same season where Duke propelled in the regular season 11-point comeback in 51 seconds, in the final 51 seconds with Jay Williams. So that was leading the way, but that was an outstanding game. But, hey, Carolina Duke, it does not get bigger than that. Yes, sorry, Louisville, Kentucky, it doesn't. Because of the regularity of play of Duke and Carolina, it doesn't get bigger than that. And it's pretty cool that we got to see it. And it's also cool, as the announcer said in the, like, near the end, how many times on games like that does, exactly as David's saying, does it not live up to expectations? I'm not saying it's the greatest game ever played in the Final Four, but if you weren't entertained, all right, you're a little too cynical for my taste. It was a very entertaining, strong game, everything you could have hoped for it to be.
Let's go on to the championship game then. And Tytel, let me ask you here, first of all, this Kansas-North Carolina game, first half looked a lot like that Kansas-Miami regional final, I thought, where just Kansas was just a different team in the first half to the second half. And the difference being that Carolina was able to stay there the entire game and really had their chances to win.
It was a great game, but very much a tale of two halves. Carolina led by 16 late in the first half, and I couldn't believe what I was watching just because 8 seeds rarely win this tournament. I think once ever back when the aforementioned Villanova beat Georgetown.
Exactly.
And they were playing with so much momentum. I know that Baycott had the ankle problem, but he looked fine. Or at least serviceable. And then just, I don't know what Bill Self said at halftime, but that's why he's a Hall of Famer, because these guys came out and played much better defense. They started hitting some threes, not so much in the free throws, but enough to get it done. and it went right down to the wire, and they tried to lose it by stepping out of bounds. It was just very incredible as a viewer to just see it go back and forth. And usually I get a sense, not because I'm an expert, but just because I've watched enough games that I can tell who's going to win a game. I could not tell who was going to win that game until the end.
Of the second half had to be reminiscent of the North Carolina Baylor game. I admit I had stepped away for a couple minutes. I'm like, did Brady Manick or some other Tar Heel get ejected again? That would just completely alter the momentum of this one.
I'll tell you, I did hear one of the comments itself did make at halftime was asked his team if they'd rather be down 15 at the half or 9 with 2 minutes left. 15 at the half.
Wasn't that Coach Self?
That was Coach Self at halftime. That was one of his comments. But Mike, how about this? The end of this game really came right down to the wire there, and it was a really poorly run possession at the very end of the game there by Carolina. A couple of them.
Yeah, but in defense of Carolina, you can tell that just playing five or six players all this time, it kind of caught up with them. You can just tell they were really fatigued down the stretch, and then not having Bacot at the end, that was huge. I mean, I'm not saying they would have won if he had been there at the end of the game, but it certainly didn't help to not have him in the last minute or two. That was not the best shot selection at the end. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the play might have been a full reverse to Manick, and Manick fell down, like tripped and fell down as he was going through, and then all of a sudden Caleb Love is left there out on an island. I don't think they wanted Love to take the final shot, there was no other option. I would have thought Brady Manick would be the one. He's sitting down on the ground, so all of a sudden you're left with that. The one little comment I will say that Tytel, I'm surprised to not mention, is that that Remy Martin of Arizona State fame almost turned into Chris Webber. So overnight, and that would have been pretty interesting. And Tytel with a little Schadenfreude, I'm sure, off that one.
Yeah, with the turnover there late, but got to look at Kansas. I mean, Brown. I'm sorry, I keep on calling him Brown because that's the way he spells his name. But Brown just said, I think he was the catalyst there in the second half. He just turned it on Joby in the second half, and that's what kept Kansas scoring and kept Kansas and got that run going that put them in the lead. Eventually.
Carolina didn't have anyone who could handle his height and mobility to make, because he could make floaters. Yeah, if you went all the way in to the rim, Manick had four blocks. Bacot was dominant on the inside, yet another close to 20 rebound game. I mean, he almost broke the record for most rebounds in a tournament and did break the record for double-doubles with six. You can't break that record ever again. So the inside, Carolina was strong, and they held McCormick, especially with McCormick having foul trouble a little bit until, of course, the final shot by McCormick. But Brown was able to find like 5 to 10 foot range and just in. And you're exactly right, Chad. That brought Kansas back in a key part in the second half, and then maintained it even when Bacot, for instance, would dominate on the boards and kick it out and get more points for Carolina down the stretch.
Yeah. I think that, the only other thing I would say is that I think it also goes back to Mike's point about Carolina being so thin. When he had Bacot hurt, he had some foul trouble. They even got a sixth man in the game here at Johnson, and he started throwing up on the court. So that was not a very pretty sight.
Tough Johnson. I mean, he'd never played so much because, Hubert likes to play in the second half, his starters the entire second half. If you had told me Johnson was going to get 11 points, I'd be like, I'd imagine, I'm not sure, but I bet Johnson's 11 were more than the Carolina bench had produced the entire tournament to that point. I'm serious. I mean, they had a lot of goose eggs from there or two. And so I would have thought, oh, that's saying something. But unfortunately, Love didn't have the same hot streak that he did against Duke, that he did against St. Peter's and some of the others. He was a little off, which he is a streaky guy. And that little bit, as Mike points out, the fatigue, Bacot rolling his ankle again, and Manick not quite being able to get open and create his own shot, all that came to fruition in the great comeback, along with, McCormick, on the offensive end with Brown, giving Kansas a real reliable rock to stand with.
Yeah, and now we've got all the stats, the greatest, biggest comeback in national championship game history.
16.
First Kansas coach to ever win two national championships, Bill Self. Four national championships now overall for the school. Griggs, I guess, you know, just, I mean, what a tournament though by Kansas at the end of the day, really was.
Yeah, it really was.
Congratulations to the Kansas City Jayhawks.
Yeah, Kansas City is Mark Emmert. Kind of funny seeing them.
And Rock Chalk Ruse now. Oh, go ahead, Griggs.
Yeah, the Rock Chalk. But yeah, it was a phenomenal tournament by Kansas. I know that there's been quite a bit of lip service. Well, what's coming down the pike with some of those level one violations, but that had really nothing to do, at least so far as I know, with this particular group that won it all. And you don't want to take anything away from the Kansas City Jayhawks, as they
this
said.
This title is not going away.
No,
because they're not players implicated on this team.
Correct.
This title will remain. Yes, some of the other postseason accolades that Kansas teams from years before got, had they won the title in 2020, which when they were the odds-on favorite, maybe that would be under the gun, but not this group.
Right.
This group deserves all the, you know, none of the bad, you know, stench that, in all honesty, exists with some of the late 2010s the recruiting.
And whenever you lose in the national championship game, it's going to sting for a long, long time, because you're going to think, oh, my God, we were so close. And there's probably teams, especially if it's a program like Butler or Memphis, to lose the way that they did on a stage that they rarely get to. But North Carolina is no stranger to the Final Four, and they're probably walking away still feeling very, very, very good about themselves, because while they didn't win it all, they did something that felt about as good as anything else other than winning it all could have, and that was beating Duke in the Final Four. And if you followed this show all season long and followed Hoops HD, you know that I've always been a believer in this North Carolina team.
This was a run by North Carolina, a team that we had with two or three weeks left of the regular season, we didn't even think it was going to be in this tournament. And what they did, Marquette, Baylor, UCLA, St. Peter's, Duke, all the way to almost beating Kansas.
Well, I think the turning point had to have been the home loss to Pitt, because at that point they had just been kind of meandering between the NCAA and the NIT line. And just a couple of weeks later, they're winning at Cameron Indoor to spoil the party for Coach K's finale at home. And even with only one or two wins in the ACC tournament leading up to a semifinal loss against Virginia Tech, you're thinking, okay, maybe they get one win. But as we saw against Baylor and et cetera, they put together a pretty decent run.
Oh, yeah.
Tytel, I've got to ask you, first-year coach there at North Carolina, your Arizona Wildcats, a one seed, also with a first-year head coach. Have you changed your mind about first-year head coaches based on what you saw this season?
I guess I can't hate them as much as normally, but I will say that, like, I don't think that a first-year coach blows a 16-point lead in the championship game. But tell me if you think I'm wrong. I mean, I don't blame it all on Hubert, because, like, if Baycott's healthy or if Love and Davis don't shoot one of 13 from behind the arc, but, like, the thing I remember, it was early in the second half, and it was a small play, and I don't even know if they showed a replay. But a Carolina guy was inbounding. They were up double digits, and he stepped over the line for the double clutch. And it's a small thing, but, like, championship teams don't do that.
Yeah, that was right in the midst of Kansas really getting back in the game too. So that was just, and they went to commercial right away. They didn't even talk about it on the broadcast. But that's a different story. But let's go ahead and pull this down here now. Actually, I want to we got a few other things we do want to discuss here as we've reached the end of the regular season. Before we get into any of their final thoughts, Salik, I've got to start with you. A few other champions we want to discuss, and you're wearing the jersey. Congrats to another national champion, your Xavier Musketeers, taking home the NIT title.
Unfortunately, I don't have a jersey number 69 right here, but after what Texas did a few years ago, I was hoping to see a national champion Musketeer shirt that I would have gladly bought at the bookstore, but alas, that did not happen. But one of the other things that's come about as a result of that, Jonah Hayes actually finishes as 4-0 as the interim head coach for Xavier. He would have been the associate head coach under Sean Miller, but just a couple hours ago, we found out he's now going to be the head coach at Georgia State. So congratulations to Hayes. And we're also going to see what happens, because I think he's going to do better his first year than another guy, Travis Steele, who actually went up the road to Mother Miami and is going to be their head coach next year.
The question is he going to do better than Sean Miller as well? Although, actually, I like your Xavier team heading into next season, but we'll see what the transfer portal.
Yeah, I wonder if the first-year rule applies to Tytel in this instance right here, although this is a different Musketeer program than what he inherited back in 2004.
Joby, I got to ask you about this. We saw a couple other champions. Last week, we spoke about UNC Wilmington winning the CBI. The Basketball Classic, the inaugural one, after you railed at how awful the Mountain West is.
Fresno State
winning the first ever TBC.
But question, Chad, why is the Mountain West in the Basketball Classic? This is the point. This kind of proves my point. The Mountain West didn't prove that they're a challenger to the Power Five or even a solid mid-major, if we want to call it. They are king of the dipshits.
That is the Golden Sombrero. Michael Hall, way to go.
Beat up on a bunch of conferences that are one-bid leagues.
Hey, the dominance is coming. The ascension of greatness is coming. Tim Miles 0-4 conference.
I guess a few other things. Tytel, on the women's side, South Carolina beats UConn in the national championship game. Geno does not win another championship.
So a couple things. One, I really thought that like Paige Beckers was like the best player in basketball. She won the award last year, but Aaliyah Boston is clearly the best player. She just gets a double-double every single game, much like Baycott. Dawn Staley, I think, elevating herself to possibly the best player-coach combination human being in women's basketball history, just because, like, I know Pat Summitt played a little basketball before becoming a coach, and Kim Mulkey is too, but, like, Dawn Staley, like, just wins everything. And third, like, I don't know, like, if UConn's going to win one anytime soon, just because, like, it seems like everybody else is getting up. Like, I know Arizona's not having any sustained dominance, but I think South Carolina's not going away anytime soon. It seems like Staley is really building something down south.
Well, I'd say. Yeah, I think pretty soon you're going to be hearing from them.
From a UVA perspective, we're just seeing what other great coach we can provide while our team goes 0-25 or whatever.
I want to give a quick shout out to a few other champions here. I don't have to spend much time on them. The WNIT title went to South Dakota State. The WBI, the women's CBI, went to St. Mary's. D2, the men's champion, Northwest Missouri State. The women's, Glenville State. D3, Randolph-Macon wins the men's championship. Hope out of Michigan, your backyard there, Mike, won the D3 women's title. NAIA went to Loyola, Louisiana for the men. Thomas More out of Kentucky for the women. So congrats to all the national champions, not just the Kansas Jayhawks, not just Rock Chalk.
I'm going to give a special congratulatory message to Northwest Missouri State here, because this was the third straight season that the Bearcats won the title. Brian Hawkins out of Creighton was a member of, I believe, two of those teams before transferring up for this season.
Maybe they should be moving up to D1 also to join Stonehill, who announced today that they're on their way up to
the Stoners. They're coming up. The Stoners.
I don't think they're the Stoners, but we're calling them the Stoners. So
that's what we're calling
them. They're joining the Northeast Conference as well. Let me at this point, though, I think that's all I got for my notes. So I want to run through each of you for any other thoughts on both this tournament and the entire season here, as we've made it through another season. And Mike, why don't I start off with you here?
Or any issue you want to discuss?
Anything else you want to discuss?
Well, first and foremost, I want to say that this is what we witnessed. This is why I think college basketball is better than college football, because you see the run made by St. Peter's all the way to the Elite Eight. You know, in football, a St. Peter's would be relegated to some toilet bowl, some flea bag bowl. Seriously, they would never have a chance. But, in basketball, they have just as much chance as the big boys. And lo and behold, they make it all the way to the Elite Eight. So, and then the second and last thing is that, while I'm glad that Michigan and Purdue made it to the Sweet 16, I think the Big Ten's got to figure out how to do better in the tournament. It seems like, you know, it seems like the last 2 years that they're very good in the metrics, but then when it comes down to the NCAA tournament, they really struggle. So just maybe it's just maybe the style in the Big Ten just doesn't jibe when it comes down to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it was another very disappointing tournament for the Big Ten, especially when you look at the ACC, who had a lousy year and had a great tournament. Really great tournament. Sleeka, let me head to you next.
I think a couple things that we're going to be watching during the offseason besides the coaching carousel is also going to be the transfer portal. In the case of the transfer portal, virtually the entire LSU team is in there now, given that they're probably going to be facing sanctions from either the NCAA or the IARP or whatever they're calling the bureau that's going to be in charge of these complex cases. And as far as the coaching carousel, another major move that happened over the weekend was once the buyout clause for Laval Jordan at Butler kicked in, he was dismissed. And about 48 hours later, Barry Collier was able to convince his next door neighbor, Thad Matta, to leave his post at IU and come back to Butler as head coach again. So we'll see how a few years away have hopefully re-energized Mata's batteries and how soon will Butler be able to potentially be competitive in what's become a rapidly improving Big East from a coaching standpoint.
Speaking about that coaching carousel, I want to go to you, Ty Tell, next. I think you have want to discuss another move that was announced today, the coaching carousel.
Yes, a quick note on my final thought, tourney related, is that if you had told me last month that Armando Bacot would have 83 more rebounds in the tournament than Oscar Tshiebwe, I would have thought you're nuts. And with all due respect to Ochai Agbaji, Armando Bacot was the most outstanding player I saw in the NCAA tournament. As far as my final thought on the coaching carousel, it is our good old friend from Penn. There he is, Fran.
There he is.
Dumpy with mustache. This was my first year at Penn. I was a freshman in 93 when he won his first of 10 Ivy League regular season titles. Then he went to Temple and won two more Atlantic 10 regular season titles. He's been in 17 NCAA tournaments, which is ridiculous. I mean, he's also going to turn like 74 this fall. So he's getting up there. And I don't know exactly why he came back to rescue his alma mater, LaSalle, but he was named as head coach and I couldn't be happier. And I'll cheer him for most of his games, except when he plays Penn, of course.
Yeah, it is great to see him back in the game, but it's going to be exciting, going to be fun to watch a little LaSalle basketball.
Do you think he'll take LaSalle to 17 NCAA tournaments?
Negative.
Joby.
Yeah, one thing that I would like to see changed, and it is reflected probably most poignantly with North Carolina, is that the committee of a few years back said, we're not going to look at the last 10 or how a team finishes. I actually disagree with that. Most metrics and most, whether it's the wagering kind, et cetera, take into how a team is playing very considerably. And if you look at our Final Four, the thing that these teams had in common, yes, of course, they won four games to get to the Final Four. Ignore that. See how they finished in their tournaments in the regular season. Kansas thoroughly went through, in my opinion, the deepest conference in the country, shared the regular season win and won that conference's tournament. Villanova came from behind to just come short and nip on Providence in the regular season and wins that tournament. They make the Final Four. Duke and Carolina, they had a crash course collision in it. But Carolina, perfect example. That team was so different. I'm glad Salika mentioned the Pitt game. You look at how they played after that, just through the end of the regular season and the tournament. This was a new team. Yes, you can't ignore the fact they got just curb stomped against a Tennessee early in the season. But the fact is, if you looked at that team, you knew they were better than what the overall metrics were. If you still took into account how a team was playing at the end, I think that would improve both the seeding performance and the prognostication, so to speak, of how the seeds play out to seed. And, that is one, I think what the NCAA has done mostly on their nitty gritty sheets, on how they analyze, for the most part, has been an improvement over the last 5 to 10 years. I do think it's gotten better and better. However, that is one aspect I would like to see come back, because I think it is very relevant and does have an impact on how teams should be evaluated. But maybe I'm nitpicking.
And, well, you know, a team like Texas A&M would have been in this tournament had...
And they should have been, as evidenced by the run. You know, yeah. Congratulations, Salika. But, you know, you beat a pretty hot team. You know, ironically, Salika's team proves the other side of my point, though.
They should not have been in based on the last 10, and yet they won.
They would not have. They wouldn't have even in that, you know, top, you know, that second four out. That criteria
coming. Griggs.
A couple things. Well, Stalika touched on this already. I've got like sort of an issue, and then maybe a couple more final thoughts on the season and the tournament. And one is the transfer portal. There are roughly 4,600 D1 scholarship men's basketball players. And right now there's 1,200 players in the portal, which is a quarter of them, but it's actually far more than that when you consider, you know, what is it, 500, 600, 800, if you had to give a guess, that have exhausted their eligibility. So it is a huge percentage of players that are in the portal. Now, I have been a proponent of the transfer portal. I have, when you look at all of the other sports, they didn't have the year in residency rule. I didn't think it was right that basketball did. And I felt like if a player is unhappy where they are, they deserve the opportunity to go somewhere else. But it is a little bit alarming that it is as high as it is. And when you see players going in there, you kind of raise the question, why are that many people so unhappy where they are or so convinced that they could do better somewhere else? I'll use St. Peter's as an example. They lost their coach to Seton Hall, and three guys that would have been returning players for that team that were all starters are in the transfer portal. This is a St. Peter's team that was a darling this year, that had that group stuck together would have been a darling next year, may have started off ranked in the top 25. If you could ever imagine a St. Peter's team being in the top 25, how crazy would that have been to see them play against Iona and whoever else they would have been able to play out of conference. And while I applaud the porthole being there, I kind of wish players would take a step back and realize that maybe what you're moving on to isn't something that's better than what you already had in a lot of cases. Thoughts on that?
Well, I guess I'd say one thing is you're losing your head coach too. So I think that kind of was a reason why with St. Peter's as a case, you know, why not move on?
And I just use them as an example. I mean, but it just seems like there's a lot of players that it's like, what are you doing?
Let me follow up on what the pup is talking about right here, because one notable name that showed up was Janai Broom out of Moorhead State. This is a guy that was probably going to be the OVC player of the year coming back next year. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of interest he's going to draw, because I think Gonzaga was one of the schools that was taking a look at him. So you'd be talking about a big step up in competition for someone like him, for example.
All depends on where these guys land. But Griggs, you have one other thought or?
Well, yeah, and then it's just what were the stories of the year? And I think that, like, you know, look at how different things are at the end of the year as opposed to where it's beginning. I love the NCAA tournament. I love championship week, but I love the progression of the entire season. No offense to Lika, but, you know, Xavier was really red hot at one point, and then they sort of tailed off. St. Peter's came out of nowhere. We were really big on St. Bonaventure at one point, and they kind of tailed off. I guess St. Peter's was the story of the tournament. I'm trying to think who was the story of the year. I don't know. I got nothing. But
well, as what's his face said in Office Space, we fixed the glitch.
Yeah. But in especially like as frustrating as it was getting around the holidays and around Christmas, and you were just wondering what is the rest of the season going to look like? It was great to finally get to February and feel like basketball was normal, because it's the first time in a long time, not just that we had a normal tournament, but that we had a pretty much normal season. And, you know, we'll be back. Well, we'll be back once a month at least, and maybe more frequently, depending on what opportunities arise. But we'll be back at the beginning of October in our preseason mode and doing this again.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to finish off here with, is even though this is our 2022 season finale show, we will be back. We'll be having a podcast probably at an average of once a month during the off season. Come end of October, we'll get into our season previews. We're starting off the next season. But this was a, it was an incredible tournament. And it was great to see a real tournament played as opposed to what we saw last year and 2 years ago with no tournament. But we, on that note, I do want to speak a moment here to thank, first of all, our Hoops HD Palace, who could not join us tonight. Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org could not be here. David Dorman could not be here tonight. Who else has joined us over the course of the year? Zach has joined us. Matt Sikowski. I'm sure I forgot somebody, but
want to shout out to all of them. Oh, yeah, you did. Brian Black. Way to forget Brian
Black. Brian Black, yes. 358 jerseys for Hope. Also, on behalf of those of us who are here tonight, Mike Cha down there, Joby Fortson and John Sleekin decides, David Griggs and John Titel up here, myself, Chad Sherwood. We are going into off-season mode. There will still be lots of content on the website that you can check out, but we are now going to begin gearing up for next season. And when we get into October, we will be starting the pursuit of, here it is, Houston 2023, the next Final Four. Kansas, you're done. It's over. Yep. But on that note, thanks for joining us, everybody. Talk to you again, probably sometime next month.